From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Happy Monday, good people. Yes, it is time to get that coffee ready and get back on the grind. Another work week has begun, and we are back at it here on this June 30th, the last day in June. Man, the summer's already flying by. About to be July, folks. We have a stacked show in store for you in just a moment. I'll be talking with the head coach of the Lansing United soccer team, head coach Eric Rutland. We'll also be chatting about the Tigers, the World Cup, and an interesting deal with Jason Kidd. You'll get to hear about it in just a sec, because here are your current sports quick hit headliners.
Happy Monday. I'm Alex Sharg, and these are your current sports quick hit headliners for this Monday, June 30th. After wrapping up the fall season in second place, Michigan State wound up 29th in the Learfield Sports Directors Cup Final standings. The Spartans tied their fourth-best showing for the 21-year-old trophy, which goes to the top all-around program with over 20 different men's and women's sports and nearly 300 NCAA Division I schools. MSU has finished in the top 40 of the Directors Cup standings in 14 of their past 16 years. The Spartans finished 30th a year ago, and their highest ranking was 22nd after winning the men's basketball national championship in the 1999-2000 school year. Stanford won the Directors Cup for the 20th straight year, and MSU defeated the Cardinal in the Rose Bowl, but was unfortunately behind them in the Fall Cup rankings. With five games left in the inaugural season, Lansing United gained 3 points against FC Buffalo in a 2-1 victory at East Lansing Soccer Complex to remain content with the standings. United may have gained 3 points in the standings, but after Detroit City's 4-0 victory over the Indiana Fire Sunday night, Lansing still remains in third place, a point behind Detroit in the Great Lakes West. United will welcome the Cincinnati Saints to the East Lansing Soccer Complex for their next match on July 4th at 7 p.m. The Lansing Lugnuts won 2 of 3 games against the Great Lakes Loons over the weekend. Yesterday, Great Lakes held off a late Lugnuts rally to take a 3-2 win at Dow Diamond. Lansing looks to take the finale of the 4-game series Monday night at Dow Diamond with knuckleballer Frank Viola on the mound. Right-hander Jonathan Martinez will start for the Great Lakes Loons. The Detroit Tigers dropped 2 of 3 in a weekend series against the Astros, losing 6-4 Sunday to drop the series. Despite the losses, the Tigers are still trending up, winning 7 of 9 games on their long road trip. Detroit returns to Comerica Park tonight for a 3-game series against the Oakland A's that kicks off tonight at 7 p.m. And before tonight's matchup with the Oakland A's, the Tigers will be celebrating the 30-year anniversary of the 1984 World Series Championship Club at Comerica Park. A Q&A roundtable with several members of the 84 team kicks off the festivities at 5 p.m. The team will also be honored in a pregame, an on-field ceremony before the first pitch, and the first 20,000 fans through the gates will receive a 1984 replica road jersey. How cool. Brad Keselowski learned that celebrations are not all fun and games after winning the Quaker State 400 in Kentucky. The Michigan native cut his hand on a bottle of champagne in the post-race frenzy and had to receive 4 stitches on his pinky finger to repair the damage. While the cut may worry fans, Keselowski says he'll have no issues with this injury next week at Daytona. The win at Kentucky moved Keselowski into 4th in the Sprint Cup standings, 58 points behind leader Jeff Gordon. Over the weekend in World Cup action, Brazil beat Chile in penalty kicks on Saturday, and Colombia beat Uruguay 2-0. Costa Rica beat Greece also in penalty kicks, and Netherlands survived to beat Mexico 2-1. The United States plays Belgium this Tuesday at 4 p.m. in knockout elimination. All teams that win move on in the cup. To Wimbledon, in the 4th-round men's single division, Andy Murray, Roger Federer, and Rafael Nadal all move on in the men's singles. Novak Djokovic plays today at 1 p.m. in the women's side. 5th-ranked Maria Sharapova moved on over the weekend and has her 4th-round singles match going on right now. We'll keep you updated on scores throughout the show as always. And number 1-ranked Serena Williams went down over the weekend in a shocking upset to Alize Cornet, losing 2-1 in the 3rd round. However, Serena is still alive in doubles play with sister Venus Williams. They play their 2nd-round match today at 2 p.m. And finally, in NBA coaching carousel news, Brooklyn Nets coach Jason Kidd is being pursued by the Milwaukee Bucks to coach. The Bucks offered a 2nd-round pick for Kidd if the Nets accept. Reports suggest that the Nets are seeking a 1st-round pick in this year's draft. The Bucks offered a 2nd-round pick for Kidd if the Nets accept. But reports suggest that the Nets are seeking a 1st-round pick in next year's draft, but the Bucks have not offered their 1st-round pick as of yet. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Time to send it back to Al to start the show. The lines are now open.
Oh, boy. Boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Well, thanks a lot, Alex. Those were your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are now open, 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. And, Alex, that deal actually is now done. The deal is finalized. The Milwaukee Bucks have fired coach Larry Drew after agreeing to send two second-round draft picks to the Brooklyn Nets to secure the coaching rights to, yes, Jason Kidd. Now, Brooklyn, they will receive draft picks in the year 2015 and 2019 from the Bucks, and the Bucks have been offering one second-round pick, but the Nets wanted a 2015 first-round pick in exchange. A negotiating chip the Bucks dismissed. So, that deal is now done. Jason Kidd becomes just the fourth NBA head coach to switch teams immediately following his rookie season and the first since Stan Albeck and Jack McKinney to do so following the 1979 and 80 season. You know, this story, ladies and gentlemen, for me, just rubs me the wrong way. You know, it begs the question, where in the world is the loyalty in today's sports? This, especially in the NBA. The NBA is kind of the prime example of just the dismissal of loyalty when it comes to your specified team or franchise, whether it be player and now even coach. This is a perfect example of that. And, you know, growing up, you know, watching, you know, the NBA fan that I am, I became an NBA fan due to my dad, dating all the way back to elementary school. And one of the guys that I was big on, who I was a huge fan of, even though he used to give my Detroit Pistons the blues, was Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd, you know, with his career now being done, his playing career now being in the books, Jason Kidd goes down as one of the most heralded point guards to ever play the game of basketball. Without a doubt, I think he's the greatest Net point guard to ever play, to ever set foot on the hardwood. Jason Kidd was an animal. He was a beast. He was something else to watch. And he cemented a really flourished legacy while playing with, at the time, the New Jersey Nets. Now, you know, a lot of reports after his career was done, he had a career in which he bounced around with many, many teams throughout his career, you know, from the Phoenix Suns to the, you know, he started with the Dallas Mavericks. I mean, he, as far as his loyalty goes with a team, there really was none. The furthest you can go with, as far as Jason Kidd's loyalty is concerned, was his stint with the New Jersey Nets, because he had a nice career with New Jersey. And now, you know, when he came out, you know, and retired from the NBA and announced that he wanted to get into the coaching ranks, I mean, there were many that praised Jason Kidd. I mean, he was such a leader on the court, and as a point guard, that's just a natural leadership position. And Jason Kidd was that guy. I mean, you saw him out there, you know, when he would play, he handled himself the right way, and you could tell that this guy could possibly be a great coach in the NBA. His first season with Brooklyn, sort of up and down. You're dealing with a lot of egos over there in the first place when you talk about, you know, Paul Pierce, Deron Williams, Kevin Garnett, and so on and so forth. That team, certainly a playoff team. They made the playoffs this season. But then, you know, you look at Kidd's career. Again, you know, he bounced around with so many teams throughout his NBA career. And now, as a coach, after his first season, he's done. Kaput, it's in the books, his coaching stint with the Nets, and now he moves over to coach with the Milwaukee Bucks. What I have a problem with in this story, again, it starts with the L word, loyalty. Loyalty, loyalty, loyalty is big, specifically when it comes to the fan base on which that franchise is supported by. I have to note that in this whole deal, throughout Jason Kidd's wanting to go to a different team, he crossed one line a fine line that you should not coach. A certain decorum with which a coach in the NBA or any major pro sport in the country should not cross. And he crossed that line. And the line that he crossed was simply this. He talked about a job in the league that was already occupied by a coach. And he not only did it one time to one person, who was Larry Drew, now the former head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, but he did it to two others in this whole stint. And later on in the show, we're going to break down this whole sequence of events which led to this whole thing. But Jason Kidd clearly crossed the line here. And honestly, you know, now, you know, I talked about that great career that he had with the Nets. He basically, with this move, set his jersey on fire and tarnished his legacy with this team. I don't see how, if you're a fan of the Nets, I can only imagine how you feel. I can only imagine how now former head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, Larry Drew, must feel. He's a guy who had no inkling or any idea that these talks were going on with Jason Kidd. The Bucks didn't even give him a heads up. Can you believe that? He probably had to turn on ESPN, listen to Current Sports, or any radio show to find out that he was jobless. I just cannot believe this. You know, what's worse is that, you know, again, Kidd did this, not only to Larry Drew, but also two other positions in this whole move. Oh, boy. And a lot of it has to be fueled by jealousy. There were many reports that Kidd was not happy at all that guys like Steve Kerr, who is now a new coach in the NBA, never coached an NBA game in his life, automatically is one of the top five highest paid coaches in the game, and a guy like Derek Fisher, who is in that same boat, are making more than Jason Kidd. He, you know, reading the reports about this, Jason Kidd was not happy about that. That was one of his motivations of resentment, period, because of the financial packages awarded to Steve Kerr in Golden State and Derek Fisher in New York. Now, it should be noted, though, that this is not about financial stability. It shouldn't be. But I think it is in this case with Kidd. Because Kidd, if you look at it, he made $187 million over 19 seasons as an NBA player. Now, on the contrary, if you compare that to Kerr and Derek Fisher, Steve Kerr made $15.6 million, Fisher $63.2 million combined. For those two, that's $78 million compared to Kidd's $187 million throughout his entire career, but he's still salty about it. Again, it was one of the motivations in this whole thing. I personally am rubbed the wrong way about it, and I want to get your thoughts on it because, to me, my perception of Jason Kidd and the man that he is, especially from a loyalty perspective, the guy he is painted to be shiesty in this whole story here. With this whole ordeal going down, Jason Kidd is perceived to be just one shiesty dude. And I want to get your thoughts on it. I want you to call in and give your thoughts on this whole story. I'm actually having Alex do research on this, too, because this is the first time in a while. First time ever for me, really, that I can recall off the top of the dome for me of a coach being, quote-unquote, traded to another team. A really interesting and weird story now. So now Jabari Parker, of course, who was the second pick in the NBA draft, he is headed over to the Milwaukee Bucks. Hey, looks as though you got a shiesty head coach, Jabari and Jason Kidd. That's just my thoughts on this because, looking at this story, it just is ugly. It's an ugly story. Simple as that. Simple as that, folks. Again, 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. There were a few lines here that Jason Kidd crossed, in my opinion, that should never be crossed by any coach. Any coach. I don't care what ranks you're coaching at. And, you know, Alex, really quickly, doing research on this whole thing, when's the last time a coach has been traded? I'm curious.
Yeah, Al, very interesting subject here. The last time, when it comes to the NBA, actually Matt brought this up, but if you remember Doc Rivers, when he left, but also Stan Van, the new general manager of the Pistons.
Right. His name has been thrown around in reports. And I was wondering why, because when I was getting ready for work today, Stan Van's name was thrown out. I'm like, why are they bringing up his name? So he's been traded before?
Yeah. So when he left the Heat in 2007 to the Magic, the Heat got a second-round draft pick and another second-round pick in 2008 for Stan Van. So throwing a vending machine in there, throwing a couple trash cans for Stan Van, maybe for Jason Kidd, they throw in a couple miscellaneous things. Maybe they have a bit of a better deal.
Right, right. Interesting stuff here. But I tell you what, when I really dive into this, later on the show, when we dive into this, again, the way this whole thing played out in the timeline as to how this deal was made is just nasty to me, folks. Oh, gosh. All right, we'll be taking your calls throughout the entire hour, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We have a great show to start your week. Again, we are honored and pleased that you have allowed Current Sports to be a part of your Monday afternoon. Later on in the show, we'll be chatting about the 1984 World Series winning Detroit Tigers. How about that? Bless you boys. Yes, they will be being honored tonight before their game. Where I'm not sure exactly when the timeline is going to happen. Is before or in the middle of the game? Not sure, but they will be, the 1984 Tigers will be honored and remembered tonight during the Oakland A's series, of course. And we'll talk about our memories from, and I don't think any of us were born during that time. It's 1984. We're young and here at Current Sports, but we'll talk about just kind of recounting that whole moment. If you got any memories from it, we'll be taking your calls on that. We'll also talk about a few World Cup surprises, as you heard in our Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. What a weekend it was in the World Cup. We'll also talk about the Tigers, who fell a series to the Houston Astros, 2-1 series loss for them. We'll give you our weekend winners, pick a Monday, and all of that. So you don't want to miss any of that, folks. We will jump to the break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the Tigers. Don't go anywhere again. Phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. A ton to get off my chest, and I'm pretty sure you got a few things to get off yours, too. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Monday, and that means on the show, Martis Monday. That's right. This is when Alex has some fun, and, you know, we play one specific artist each and every Monday. But there's a catch. That artist has to start with the letter M. And today's artist, I've never heard of these guys. Mansions on the Moon, that's the name of that was a pretty smooth track. I might have to download some of their stuff. That's pretty smooth stuff, Alex. Thanks a lot. Mansions on the Moon is our artist today, so you'll be hearing that in and out of our two breaks today. Well, Matt Lucky now joins me. Matt, my man, how was the weekend, brother?
Weekend was good. It sounds like it was better than Jason Kidd's, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I tell you what, man. And we're going to get to that in our third segment of the show, but just reading that story and how it all transpired for me, Matt, it just got under my skin, man. And, you know, I used to be a big Jason Kidd guy. That started to dwindle was when he used to give my Pistons the Blues back in the day. But, man, he was a great point guard, a great player. But I'm starting to see his true colors here. And I'm going to talk about that later on in the show. Again, we'll be taking your calls throughout this entire show, 517-355-9527. Really quickly, we'll start with some Tiger action. The Tigers, Detroit Tigers, they fell to the Houston Astros over the weekend. They dropped 2 of 3 in a weekend series against them, losing 6-4 yesterday to drop the series. Despite the losses, the Tigers are still trending up, winning 7 of 9 games on their road trip. They return to Comerica Park for a 3-game series against the Oakland A's that kicks off tonight at 7 p.m. You know, it was an interesting weekend for the Tigers, Matt, specifically looking at last night's game Drew Smyly on the mound, and he looked to have an upper respiratory problem. He had a headache. He was busting out in cold sweats before the game. But, it was his shortest start that he's ever had in his career. And, you know, it was interesting because Miguel Cabrera and Victor Martinez, they complete a 3-game series with one combined hit. I had to, you know, I had to make sure my contacts were in when reading it. I couldn't believe that. This was an odd series for this team. And, you know, it seemed as though, because I watched a little bit of that game yesterday, they just couldn't get that one big hit that they really needed, you know, and that was kind of the song throughout that series. And how about Austin Jackson, who continues to struggle? He had his first 4-strikeout game of the year and fell to .158 with runners in scoring position. Again, that's why, you know, my panic meter, you never know with the Tigers, you know, going back to my panic meter here, it teeters around, you know, 8.8 to 9.2.
You know, 8.8
to 9.2 is the range that is teetering around right now. I don't know where it's at right now. It's probably 8.8 right now. But, you know, the Houston Astros, it was kind of alarming. I think that, you know, looking at that series, the Houston Astros are better than what people perceive them to be. Just looking at their record, because they're last in their division right now. The Houston Astros are better than that right now, I think, and Matt. And you know, looking at this team for the Tigers, I just thought that, you know, this is a perfect opportunity for them to get a sweep and ride some momentum going into this Oakland A's series against an Oakland team who has really been a thorn in the Tigers' side for quite some time.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to hearing about Coco Crisp for the next
exactly.
5 days, because right. I have a feeling he's going to get some big hits. But as far as the Astros series goes, I mean, you're right. They're definitely better than their record indicates, and they're better than they have been. I mean, they were the seller of the league for like 2 seasons. And they're starting to put things together. They've got some new young talent. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the series, I mean, you have Martinez and Cabrera go, I believe it was 1-for-27 combined.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Throughout the 3 games.
Yeah.
That's an aberration.
That's
not going to happen often.
Right.
And you look at it, and you know, they have the lack of production they did, and you still lose a game in the 11th inning, 4-3, and then you lose a game 6-4. So it's not like they were getting blown out.
Right.
You know, Drew Smyly was so sick on Saturday, they sent him home, or to the hotel at least. Mm-hmm. Comes out, fights through it on Sunday, has a terrible outing, but, you know, there's a reason for it. And obviously in the post-game presser, he was denying any ill effects. He didn't want that to...
Right, no excuse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not making excuses, which you like to see.
Right.
But nonetheless, he wasn't 100%.
No,
so
not
you
at
go
all.
Out, I mean, you still battle in the game. They still had every opportunity to win that game, even with his early struggles.
Right.
So I don't think you can make too much of them dropping 2 out of 3. I mean, they were 7-for-9 on the road trip.
Yep.
I mean, if you're going to win 7 games on the road in a 9-game span, that's a good sign. So I think they're heading in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
June is finally ending. It's been the longest month of the season for them by far.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can get things rolling. I think this Oakland series and then the Tampa Bay series after it are going to be huge. They have to play well at the homestand.
Right.
Get something going into the All-Star break because, you know, the AL Central is going to be a bit more of a dogfight than it has been in years past.
Yeah, they definitely got to take advantage of this homestand now. I mean, they play a 3-game series against Oakland, as you alluded to, a 4-game series against Tampa Bay, then a 2-game series, short 2-game series against the LA Dodgers. Alex, what are your thoughts about this weekend?
Yeah, one quick thought is it actually has to do with something that you said, Al, earlier on this year. And you said your panic meter, one of the reasons it's so high is
my
because...
My panic meter has been getting a lot of publicity these past few weeks.
Yeah, well, it's because... Everyone on the Tigers team, besides Miguel Cabrera and Victor Martinez, is inconsistent. Now, the fact that the Tigers were this close every game, 6-4, 4-3 in extras, winning one game, the fact that they can do that without the combination of Miguel Cabrera and Victor Martinez says a lot, Al, taking a positive out of that. The fact that the team can put up runs without their two big oldies, that says a whole lot. So for me, that's a good sign that I take out of it. And like Matt said, on Sunday, Smyly only going 2/3. He was sick. And actually, if you watch the end of the game, the final strike they called on Austin Jackson was a complete ball. The umpire just wanted to leave.
Right,
he was ready to camp out and go home. He was sick of the old Astro-Tiger series where the Tigers swept them 4-0.
That wasn't a strike. I saw it, too. I'm sitting there like, what?
Just wanted to beat traffic, guys.
Okay.
Exactly.
Gotta beat the crowd.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that's a positive sign because, yeah, I mean, those two have clearly been the workhorses for this team. But again, I still worry about, that's the only one series. I still worry about the consistency of these guys, especially guys. I'm really worried about Austin Jackson right now. I mean, he has not played well. It was interesting. I was reading an interesting article in the Freep today by writer John Lowe on whether or not to start Austin Jackson. And a quote from that article from Brad Ausmus. He said, quote, he's the one on whether to sit him. during this Oakland A's series. Ausmus said of Jackson, quote, he's the one true center fielder that we have. We have to find some way to get him going. It's not like he's over the hill. Something has to click, and I firmly believe it will. He's a much better player than what we've seen. Now, Jackson, again, he's hitting 244, which is 34 points below his lifetime average entering the season, with 3 homers and 22 RBIs. And really, many of his struggles have come in the 5th and 6th spots, as Ausmus hoped that he could be a middle-of-the-order producer. But he simply hasn't. I think maybe Ausmus is maybe trying to force the issue here. But again, the saying in baseball is, if you're in a funk, especially for a batter, somebody at bat, you can't thaw out by sitting on the bench. You sometimes just got to play through it. And I think that's what Ausmus is going to do here. But it is alarming, though, because Jackson has not been great.
It's alarming because, I mean, he was the leadoff hitter last year.
Exactly.
And, you know, he has these great playoff struggles. They move him to the middle of the lineup thinking that maybe takes the pressure off of him. Maybe takes, you know, kind of the expectations of being the leadoff hitter off of him.
Right.
And it worked for a little bit. And now he's kind of regressing again. So it's worrying because, you
know. Would you bench him if you're Ausmus?
I take a long, hard look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even though there aren't maybe many options to replace him.
None, really.
When you're getting the lack of production, even from a guy who you've already kind of moved around in the order, trying to kind of open up something for him, if it's still not happening, maybe it's time to start looking at other options.
I say right now, I would wait and see how he produces in this Oakland A's series, more specifically because I think you need him in this series. You know, him being, again, as Ausmus said, he's really the one true center fielder that this team does have. And you're going again against a team like the Oakland A's, who is a team who can sting you on so many different ways. I think you see how he plays out this Oakland A's series and then make your judgment from there. But
yeah,
if he doesn't, you got to bench him, I think, after this series.
Yeah, and keep in mind that center fielders typically aren't big power hitters. You know, those guys are typically pretty much playing defense, if anything. Austin Jackson, he's a very streaky hitter, and we've seen that this year. I mean, there was a time where his average was down to 230. He gets it back up to 260, 270. Now he's plummeting a little bit back down. So wait and see. If only Torii Hunter had some legs still. If he wasn't 38 Torii Hunter is? If he wasn't that old, I mean, that's a guy who's played center field his whole entire career, that if he had the legs still, he'd be perfect for it. But I agree with what you guys said. I'd say even maybe wait a week after All-Star break. Maybe he needs the break to kind of sit back and kind of reevaluate things. I think it's still a little bit early. There's only a week or two left before the break. I think give him a little bit more time.
Yeah, and it's got to be mental.
He's got
all the physical tools. Like you said, he's not over the hill.
Right.
And maybe, I think, Alex, I think you're onto something. Because if you bench him before the All-Star break, then I feel like he's got more time to sulk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got more time to think about it. And then maybe the damage is irrevocable and you can't bring him back.
If you bench him before. Okay, gotcha.
I think, like Alex said, you wait until after, let him play into the All-Star break. If it's still going south by then maybe you make a move. But I think to bench him in June or early July might spell trouble for the rest of the season.
Too premature. Gotcha. Folks, if you got any comments on this, 517-355-9527. Series prediction against the A's. I think this is a good test for the Tigers to see where they are right now, kind of a litmus test, if you will, early in the season for the Tigers. I'm going to say 2-1 Tigers. I think they do get 2 wins out of this thing.
I think they take 2 as well.
Alex?
Yeah, agreed here. I think that Cabrera and Victor Martinez are going to come bouncing back after that one hit series. So, yeah, I like it. And keep in mind, that last game on Sunday also, you said it, the swan song for them was they couldn't get the big hit. Give some credit to Houston. Altuve tore them up. Houston got so many big hits in that series. I mean, that wasn't the same Houston Astros team that we saw when the Tigers swept them earlier on in the year.
They're better than what their record says right now. I don't care what you say. Watching that game, I'm like, this isn't a team that looks like they're last in the division. They're definitely better than what that record says. So, all right. Well, you know what? Let's really quickly, guys. Tonight, the 84 Detroit Tigers, bless you boys, they will be honored and remembered, of course, one of the heralded years in Detroit Tigers history. You know, my grandfather would always talk about, you know, how good that team was. He was a huge, huge Tigers fan back in the day. They were one of the greatest teams in baseball history, to be frank with you. They streaked to a record of a 35-5 start, shook off pesky Toronto for the division title, then swept the Kansas City Royals for the American League Championship, of course going on to win the World Series. Sportscaster Al Ackerman coined the phrase, "Bless you, boys," and it stuck like glue. Now, a record 2.7 million people, they streamed into Tiger Stadium in 1984, nearly 25% more than they had ever in a season at Detroit's historic baseball corner. Boy, oh boy, and Sparky Anderson, how about him? He was such a great, great character in Detroit Tigers' legacy. He taught those guys how to act and perform like professionals, I tell you. Sparky will certainly be missed. And, you know, I think that's a time that's such a celebration in the city of Detroit. But it's also a time where, you know, when you bring up, you know, the 1984 World Series win, you know, I got a friend of mine from Chicago who's a huge, huge baseball guy. And, you know, he's a little older than me, but so he remembers the 1984 series, and he always remembers the riots that took place in Detroit. Sad that that's a lot of people remember that, but, you know, cars were being set on fire. There was a lot of violence. But, man, you know, overall, that team was great, though. I wore my Alan Trammell shirt, you know, last week. I mean, just to remember that moment. It was a great, great moment in history. But, you know, a lot of people do remember those riots just because they were so crazy. It was a crazy time, you know.
It was a crazy time, and that is usually what gets the publicity.
Oh, yeah, especially in Detroit. Especially
exactly.
In Detroit.
It was too easy. The stories were too easy. But as far as the 84 Tigers go, it's almost surprising that we're having a 30th anniversary celebration.
I know, right?
And it's weird that they're taking time out because that's all you hear about.
Right.
Anytime, ever since the Tigers kind of bounced back from the, you know, the really dark days of 2003 and when, you know, Mike Muroth was losing 20 games in a season.
Since
the Tigers kind of came back to relevance and competed for World Series championships, the 84 Tigers are the standard. They start out 9-0. They, you know, 35-5, wire-to-wire champs. We're never not in first place. Anytime a Tigers team is in contention, that is the club that they're compared to.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That is the line. That is the standard for greatness. As far as the Tigers go, definitely, maybe as far as Detroit sports go in general.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is the golden team, the 84 Tigers. So
right.
Even though I wasn't alive for the 84 Tigers run, I still know about the team. You still hear about
exactly.
The team all the time.
Oh, yeah, without
you know, you still see T-shirts, you know, roar like it's 84.
Yep.
I mean, it's been 30 years, and they are still a relevant team in Detroit sports history. And in baseball history. So it really says something about what they accomplished, what they meant to the city, and a standard has forever been set by
the 84
Tigers.
Quick question. If Jim Leland would have led this team to a World Series championship, I think we had a discussion here on the show once before, but if Jim Leland would have done that, do you think he would have been looked at as the greatest manager in Tigers history over Sparky? It's a tough one. It's a good debate, I think.
That is a tough one. Maybe in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if they win that first one, just
gotcha.
Because it was such a meteoric rise
right.
from where they were to get to that point in such a short period of time, maybe. But I don't know. That'd be a great debate.
That'd definitely been a Barbershop Wednesday to never forget. All right, folks. Well, let's hit the second break. When we come back, we will be chatting with the head coach of the Lansing United soccer team. You don't want to miss that, and we'll talk a little World Cup as well. We will be right back. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Let's get to our guest for today's show. He is the head coach of the Lansing United soccer team, and with five games left in the inaugural season, United gained 3 points against FC Buffalo in a 2-1 victory at East Lansing Soccer Complex to remain content with the standings as the final days of the regular season quickly slip away. It's my pleasure to welcome Eric Rutland to Current Sports. How you doing, Eric?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for joining us. Now, looking at this past weekend's game against FC Buffalo, Eric, what did you like and what did you didn't like from your team this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, obviously picking up 3 points and a win at home is great, so that was the highlight of the match for sure. You know, it took us a little while to get going. First 15, 20 minutes of the match, I didn't think we really had the run of play. We hadn't played a game in a week, and Buffalo was coming off of a Friday match. So they took form a little bit quicker than we did. But after 20, 25 minutes into the match, I thought we, you know, our rhythm and possession, and, you know, we got into the game and we started to make some plays going forward. And the start of the second half was great. You know, Matt Brown picked up a couple goals. But then obviously towards the tail end of the game, you know, Matt got sent off. We played a player down, and we probably made it a tighter game than it should have been in the last, you know, 10 to 15 minutes there.
You know, Eric, the season, as I just alluded to, is certainly dwindling down now. You guys have 4 matches left. You know, with this victory, though, how confident are you that you guys can still, you know, make a roar here, make a late push, and move up in the standings?
We're confident. I mean, we've had good results against the top teams in the league. You know, our guys, you know, from a confidence standpoint, we're playing a decent brand. We've been very good at home. And I think, you know, 4 of our remaining matches are at home, which is fantastic. So, you know, we've got a lot going our way. And at the end of the day, you know, we can really just worry about our remaining matches and control our own destiny. So, you know, maximizing our points in these final games is critical. And then, you know, hopefully some things go our way in the, you know, in our opponent's final matches as well.
Eric, for you, does it make it even more nerve-wracking not knowing what these other teams are going to do in the standings as far as points are concerned? How do you approach that as a coach?
Yeah, I mean, as a coach, you can worry about that stuff and think about, you know, the 100 different ways things could play out. But at the end of the day, you know, we're just trying to stay steady on the course, which is take one game at a time, you know, worry about the next match, prepare the best we can, and then at the end of the day, maximize points in each of our games. And so we can really just worry about what we can control, and that's the next game. So for us, that means getting ready for Friday's match against Cincinnati.
Eric Rutland, head coach of the Lanch United soccer team. You know, Eric, for you, when you approach this season, before the season even began, you know, as it now dwindles down, what did you want to see happen in order for you to be, you know, content with this season on how it ends? And what were your goals? What will be considered a successful one in your eyes as the season ends?
Yeah, I mean, there were kind of 2 goals, right? One is the soccer side, and then the other is kind of the organization side. And, you know, from the soccer side, which is kind of my concern and priority, was to be competitive in each game, you know, finish in the top half of the table in our division of the conference, and then just put ourselves in a position where we could make a run for the playoffs. And, you know, right now I think we're in a good spot to make all of those things happen. Obviously, you know, we've got to stay steady and worry about the next match, but, you know, we feel pretty comfortable and, you know, we've had a good run, and the players that we've brought in have just responded really well to what we're trying to accomplish.
You know, Eric, you know, it's so crazy. I've been out to a few of your guys' matches, and, you know, specifically that first match, you know, to open up the season. I mean, it was a crowd of excess of over 800 people there, and it's been relatively consistent throughout this year. How impressed have you been with the fan support who come out and support you guys at home?
Yeah, the fan support's been just fantastic. I mean, getting into it our first year, you're kind of on pins and needles to see how supportive the community is going to be and how many people come out. But, you know, we've just been blown away. I mean, the players are really excited to play at home. You know, our environment in East Lansing there is good or better than most in the league. So first year club, that's been fantastic. And, you know, we didn't have many expectations from a numbers standpoint in regards to how many people we were going to get out to games. But obviously those first 2 matches kind of set the bar. You know, so to be, you know, 700, 800, 900, over 1,000 2 matches ago at home, it's just been phenomenal.
I tell you what, Eric, you can't go anywhere, you know, whether it be the grocery store or to the bar or anywhere, without somebody bringing up the World Cup and just soccer in general. Do you think a lot of that fan support you just talked about has to do with the fact that this is also a World Cup year as well?
Yeah, the game's growing in the U.S. There's absolutely no doubt about that, you know. And the World Cup, I think, is a good picture and kind of a standard of what that growth looks like, you know. And you hear about the different watch parties that are taking place in East Lansing as well as around the nation. You know, you can start to grasp, you know, how big this thing is and how much it's grown and taking shape in the U.S. So, you know, that's been cool to create some synergy, you know, between the World Cup and what we're trying to do in Lansing, and you know, it'll be fun to see what the national team does against Belgium as well.
Yeah, definitely. Without a doubt, tomorrow's match is certainly going to be an exciting one. Now, Eric, you know, we also had this debate, I believe it was last week here on the show. And, you know, we went back and forth and pretty much came to a general consensus on it. But I want to get your thoughts on this. If the USA, let's say they go out early and, you know, they end up losing tomorrow's match, just figuratively speaking, What does it mean for soccer here in America? What will the popularity be like? I mean, is it going to be something where, okay, the U.S. are out and you think America is going to just kind of forget about soccer until the World Cup comes back again? Or will there be some legitimate progress here as far as the popularity is concerned?
It's a good question. I think you could kind of go both ways with that. And my spin on it is obviously this is our second time in a row ever making the round of 16, the knockout stages of the World Cup. So I think that bodes well for the U.S. and kind of puts a stamp on the fact that, you know, we're a nation that can get to that round. And so the next step for us is to get to the quarterfinals, right? And to make that next step, you know, on the world stage of soccer. So, you know, if we don't do that, I think things kind of stay as is, and we kind of look at Jurgen Klinsmann to push us, you know, into that next round in 2018. But I think if we do make that next step this year, I think that further solidifies the growth of the game and probably gets even more people excited about soccer in the U.S. You know, and for me, it's not necessarily the soccer crowd that we're trying to get excited. It's people who have never watched soccer before that we're trying to get out to games and recognize that it's an exciting sport to be a part of, right, from a supporter standpoint. So I think that's the next kind of evolution of the game in the U.S., and I think, honestly, we're on the verge of changing a lot of hearts to be more towards, you know, the soccer supporters end instead of other sports here in the U.S.
Yeah, that's so true. So, Eric, I mean, just kind of dueling that down. So you basically think, you know, if the U.S. comes out and is able to you know, put together a few wins here, as, you know, we're now in the single game elimination round of 16. If they are able to, you know, get some wins here and really push the envelope as far as, you know, getting to that final, you do think the popularity kind of hinders on that outcome?
Yeah, I think it hinders on the outcome in regards to, like I said, the non-soccer population.
Right.
So, you know, it's on ESPN in the morning now, so you've got a lot of people who aren't necessarily soccer people hearing about the national team. And so I think that if we could win one more game, I think that, like I said, it probably sways a few more non-soccer people to get excited about the game, which would be great. And I think, you know, probably more important than anything, if we can win a game in the knockout stages, you know, it brings a lot more credibility to what we're doing in the U.S. when you look at the global game. So there aren't many countries around the world that have a lot of respect for U.S. soccer. And for us, I think as a nation, that's probably the most important next step that we take, where we start to get, you know, some respect from Spain and England and Germany and some of the more established soccer nations around the world.
All right, Eric, before I let you go, you know, I got to get your thoughts on a prediction here. How far do you think this team will go?
For me, I think we've got one more game in us. I think we can get past Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hope. And I think after that, you know, it'd probably be tough for us to continue to make a run with Jozy Altidore not in full form and, you know, some other personnel stuff with the team. But I think we can make this next game happen and, you know, hopefully solidify ourselves on that world stage.
There you have that. All right, Eric, well, you guys now prepare for a July 4th matchup against the Cincinnati Saints. You all will be looking for some revenge, as the last time you guys played Cincinnati, you fell 3-2. What type of team is Cincinnati, and how are you guys prepping for that matchup?
Yeah, I mean, Cincinnati are a good side. They have some good athletic players up top. They caught us on the counter when we played at third place. And, you know, so we're going to kind of be prepared to defend against their athleticism up top. And, you know, for us being able to play at home, it's a matter of just dictating the game. So we want to maintain possession. You know, we want to be clean in our defending schemes, but then also really creative going forward. So, you know, that's what we're going to be talking about this week in training. And just for us, it's, again, confidence playing at home and hopefully giving the Sons of Ransom and all the supporters a good show.
Go on out, people. Again, that's on July 4th, 7 p.m. Eric Rutland, head coach of the Lansing United soccer team. Hey, Eric, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Take care, and hopefully we'll see you out at another game this season.
Oh, without a doubt. You already know. Thanks a lot, Eric.
Okay, see you guys.
All right. Boy, oh boy. So, Matt, did you happen to catch any of the World Cup action over the weekend? I tell you what, there were a few surprises, some exciting stuff. You know, I personally like when those games go to penalty shootouts. They have me, like, sweating, dude. I was working out, actually, watching one of the matches on the screen as, you know, working out yesterday, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I almost fell off the treadmill watching it.
I see the drama in it.
Yeah.
I just hate that that's how the matches are decided.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that'd be like at a basketball game. Well, you know what? Tied after double OT. Let's just have a free throw shooting contest.
No, it's not. It's
exactly like that.
No, Matt. It is
100% exactly like that.
It is not. You can't equate it to a free throw shooting contest.
I just did, because that's what it is.
And at least in a shootout, you're going against, you still got to go against the goalie, you know, and there's a level of.
I mean, Al, you watched them.
I did.
If you put that on the net. Chances are really good you're going to score.
And it's pretty much, you know, there's a lot of luck that goes with it as well, because that goalie has to predict in the blink of an eye.
Right, like Ochoa in the Mexico game, he guessed the wrong way.
Right, he guessed the wrong way.
And he was the best goalie of the tournament so far.
Right,
and he
right.
played great in the game against the Netherlands. I watched both games yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Netherlands-Mexico was great.
Oh, that was great. I watched a little
fantastic.
Bit of that,
too. Yeah. The second game, Costa Rica-Greece. Maybe not as you know, as good of a skill, you know, wise
right,
matchup.
Right.
Great drama, though. Great
right.
drama. Costa Rica to play with one man down for as long as they did was incredible.
They were
to
great.
Hold
Costa
off Greece
Rica
for as long
great.
As they did, incredible. They're probably the team of the tournament, the big surprise coming out of nowhere. I think they're going to get run over by the Netherlands in the next round.
Yeah.
Either way, great run for Costa Rica.
The free throw comparison, I see where Matt's going, because it's kind of like you're taking a skill that there's more to the game than just shooting a free throw with basketball. There's more to the game than shooting in the soccer net. So I see where Matt's going, where you're just kind of taking one skill and doing a sudden death kind of match there. However, I think the better comparison could be like, let's say you're doing a one-on-one receiver defensive back quarterback completion competition, because at least there's a defender. When you're shooting a free throw, there's no defender, but it's taking a
right.
skill.
Yeah.
It's like if it was like a fastest shot shootout, you know, for hockey or for the fastest pitch, you know, it's so specific. You know, I see where Matt's going. Why choose that specific? Why shooting? What if you do anything like fastest to get out of the defensive zone? It's so broad and so
They do give you the two overtime periods, you know, and soccer is a crazy game.
Yeah,
where,
but both teams are just playing for penalties. I mean, some teams are just playing to get to penalties.
You're just
trying to last as long as you can, so
for,
you have a toss-up shot instead
Brazil,
of trying to win the game. Al, I believe it was you who last week said you play to win the game.
You don't play
to get to penalty kicks. That's
knew,
not the same
I
thing.
I knew that was coming. I had a feeling. Watch Matt bring that up. Yeah, and I see where you're going
right?
with it. But, you know, I to equate it to a free throw shooting contest, it's
okay.
different because you got a defender, you know, and if that defender guesses the right one, which happens.
It might even be worse than that, because it's not even like the guy who gets fouled, like, you know, Arjen Robben yesterday.
Right, right.
At the end of the Netherlands game. He gets fouled in the box.
Which
he gets
was,
the penalty
that
shot.
Was some questionable call.
He doesn't even
too.
Have to take it.
Yeah, that's true. He can choose.
I mean, that'd be
choose.
Like, you know, somebody got fouled for the Spurs or something, so let's have Tony Parker go out and shoot
the free
throws.
The Hack-a-Shack doesn't exist.
Because he's our best free throw shooter.
Right.
I mean, it's just such a weird thing. I feel like another thing is, if you get fouled in the box, you should be the one shooting the ball. You shouldn't bring out the specialist to come in and win the game for you. I think that should be your responsibility. But
so you don't think that with these outcomes now in the single elimination round, that these are legitimately the best teams, you know, with these outcomes that are ensuing right now, these aren't the best teams out of these orders?
I don't know if I would say that. I think most of the time the better team ended up winning anyway.
Because I think
but
that's
I don't
the
know if that
is.
I don't know if that's the best way to determine the winner. That's
Just
all
let
I'm
them
saying.
Keep playing in overtime.
Let them keep playing until somebody scores. Because if you don't have penalties looming, I think you see teams take a lot more chances in trying to create opportunities. And then you get those great counters. And I feel like that's even more dramatic to me than penalties. When you see a team who gets a great chance, ball ricochets out, and then the other team starts that counterattack, I mean, that's exciting. That's 15
right.
seconds where it doesn't get a lot better than having a team just striking down the field with numbers. I mean, I feel like that would be more exciting than just having it, okay, well, let's see if this guy hits the crossbar.
Interesting. It's
interesting. That's what it all comes down to. I hate it.
And I was totally surprised. How about the Dutch, though? I mean, it's unbelievable.
They're
Mexico,
so good.
They're so... I did not know they were this good. I had no idea that the Netherlands was this
good.
Well,
they were second in 2010.
Yeah, they were.
Lost to Spain in the final.
Yeah.
People left them for dead coming into the tournament.
I had them not even getting past Mexico. I thought Mexico was going to win yesterday. I couldn't believe that.
I like watching the Dutch play just because how up and down they get.
Right.
And they started out more defensive, but then in the second half, they started to attack and
right.
Arjen Robben, man.
He's impressive.
He's 30 years old.
He's impressive.
He's making 24-year-olds look ancient. He is.
Just like nothing, yeah.
I mean, I believe they clocked him. He runs a sub-10-second 100 meters.
Wow, really? I didn't know
yes.
that. Wow.
He is crazy fast. And he is, you know, he's got that look where it's like the YMCA when you go.
Right, he's just turning
there's
it
an
up.
Old guy who you don't think has it. You know, he's balding. He's,
right,
he
right.
doesn't look like he's
like
going to be
Kyrie
the best
Irving
out there.
Commercial, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then he comes out there and just destroys people.
Yeah, he's pretty impressive.
It was insane. And
looking at that Costa Rica match, you know, Costa Rica, a team, I was the better team throughout those 90-plus minutes.
Absolutely.
And yet it took them to go to a penalty shootout to win over Greece. Interesting.
And they had the lead up until the last few minutes. I mean, how many goals in the 85th or let's just say 80th plus minutes have we seen? I mean,
right.
It's crazy. No lead is safe in this World Cup.
Not at all.
I think that contributes to how popular it's been just because there's been so many good games.
I mean, every day
there's at least one classic.
Exactly. That is very true. And I want to say this, though. There were some questionable calls, though, yesterday.
Absolutely.
There were a few. I'm like, what? Really? You know? So it makes it, you know, it adds the drama. It adds the drama to it. So interesting stuff. All right, Matt. Well, we only got 8 minutes left in the show. Really, really quickly here, our weekend winners. A lot happened, like each and every weekend happens over the weekend. That's why we decided to bring this segment to you all. Man, if you had to choose one winner, your favorite winner throughout the weekend, it's tough. I really had some trouble with this weekend. But who was yours? Who's your weekend?
Al, is yours Jason Kidd?
That's, you know, I'm taking a spin on this one. Did you know I'm taking a spin because I'm going with a weekend loser here.
And that's gonna be.
You already know who it is.
It's gonna be Jason Kidd.
It's not Jason Kidd.
Oh, it's not.
It's Larry in this whole thing.
Really?
Yeah. Go ahead.
He does get the short end of the stick.
He got. He got shiced it, man.
He really did.
All right, who's your weekend winner?
I'm going to go with Wesley Sneijder from the Netherlands.
Okay.
You know, 88th minute, country's hopes are dwindling fast.
Right.
They get a corner, it bounces out to him, and he absolutely hits a rocket past Ochoa to tie the game.
Right.
They go on to win. He saves his country.
It was a great moment. A great, great moment.
Heck of a shot.
I can't disagree with that one. But yeah, I'm going with the weekend loser. And
okay.
Yeah, for me, as I just said, it's got to be Larry Drew in this whole Jason Kidd fiasco nonsense. And, you know, the biggest problem I had with this whole thing, Matt, is that Jason Kidd, he violated the golden rule with me. You do not talk about a job unless it's vacant. Larry Drew had no clue that these talks were going on. He probably had maybe an inkling in the back of his head, but he had no clue these interviews were going on and that this whole notion of Jason Kidd coming over to coach the Bucks was going on. He got the short end of the stick on this one. I was really disappointed with the whole which how it ensued. And Kidd brought up the vacancy and, you know, talk not to bad. You know, he I don't think his intent was to bash Larry, but he basically did that by talking about the job and talking about the opening before it was open. I really had a problem with it. And, you know, he did this 3 times in a matter of days to 3 different people, I thought. The general manager's role with the Nets from Billy King, having seen Stan Van Gundy, of course, get the same broad powers in Detroit with the Pistons, with that GM role, which gives him power to really move the team, you know, and play with player personnel the way he wants to, while also being the coach of the team. He brought it up about, you know, he threw Billy King's name in there. And then new Bucks owner Mark, I think I'm saying his name like Lassery, and Wes Ittens then came into play for Kidd, receiving permission for the team to speak with him last week, and he kind of just, you know, threw the Brooklyn's team ownership under the bus, and also the Bucks team ownership under the bus as well. It just really the way this transpired for me, I just looked at it and just shook my head. I look at Jason Kidd in a totally different fashion now.
I mean, it might work out for everybody.
I don't know. Not Larry. Not Larry Drew.
Well, yeah, everybody.
That's why
Larry.
He's my weekend loser.
Everyone except Larry Drew
is crying somewhere.
It will work out for because he just missed out on a chance to coach Jabari Parker. But
yes, he did.
Jason Kidd gets to do that. He gets to go coach a much younger team.
Yeah,
probably has a little bit more respect in the locker room because I would rather coach a young team. If I'm a young coach, I would rather have a young team than to have an experienced team of guys who might not have that level of respect.
I think the Bucks don't even make the playoffs next year.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, they were
not at all.
I mean, they had the number two pick for a reason.
Right.
They were awful.
They're terrible.
The Nets are probably going to hire a coach who's better than Jason Kidd anyway.
I don't think Kidd is going to be happy in Milwaukee, to be honest. You go from New York to Milwaukee. Come on. Milwaukee is
He does get to coach Jabari Parker, though.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
That's the only exciting part of this whole thing.
That's exciting.
Him.
And they have much more room to grow than the Nets do.
Yeah. Well, that's...
You guys are missing a big winner this weekend. How about Alize Cornet, the French woman who defeated Serena Williams at Wimbledon?
Yeah, that's
the
big.
Number one seed, Serena Williams, at Wimbledon. She never loses at Wimbledon. At Wimbledon?
That was big, too. How about Brittany Griner? Did you guys see Brittany Griner with 11 blocks over the weekend?
11 blocks.
She had 11 blocks. She set a WNBA record with the most blocks ever in regular season history. Brittany Griner. She's a beast. She is a
Was there ever
monster.
Any doubt?
No, she's I mean yeah, she's just so freakishly like her physical specimen is kind of freakishly unfair to any woman playing the game right now, to be honest with you. I mean she can dunk with ease. She's so lengthy. Man, oh man. I mean, she could give the NBA guys a few runs.
Yeah, it's not just the physical gifts. I mean, she's a heck of a player. She knows exactly what she's doing.
Yeah.
She is probably the most dominant force ever to come into the WNBA ever.
Without question.
Won't be matched for a decade. She's a once in a generation talent for sure. Hats off to her. Good job.
Yeah, so people, she's a winner as
people
well.
People thought that Lisa Leslie was that end all be all most dominant. I don't know. And that's still kind of a toss up between Leslie and Griner because Lisa Leslie was very dominant.
She was, but not like Griner though. I mean, her wingspan and her physical specimen alone.
Griner's bigger, but the dominance still was with Lisa Leslie, the same kind of dominance that Griner had.
Because Lisa was just so talented and fundamentally gifted that, you know, she when you looked at Lisa, you know, she's just another, you know, basketball player who's got some moves in the paint and she's really, really good. But when you look at Brittany Griner, it's intimidating. It's got to be intimidating for some of those girls to look at her and go against her. I mean, 11 blocks, that's never been done before in the history of the WNBA. So, it's pretty impressive stuff. Well, guys, you know something I'm pretty excited about later on this week? You know, July 4th is coming, and we all agreed to have a hot dog eating contest, folks. That's something to look forward to later on this week. We will be having a hot dog. Hopefully, I don't throw up.
When are you starving yourself?
That is just... I know,
when
right?
You start your... I started Saturday. I've been fasting.
Matt is so ready for this. Matt, I think we should get a trophy to Matt right now. Because I think Matt is so locked in. He is prepping. He's probably going home later on today and eating just 10 of them. Just as practice for us, Alex. I think we're done in this whole thing.
Hey, well, he's very thin. He's got probably a lot of water. Ready to go inside. Like he's probably prepped this. He's probably done his research. But hey, Al, I mean, we're both pretty thin too. I think our metabolisms are just as fast. I think we'll give him a run for his money.
We're gonna see. It's gonna be interesting to see how this whole thing
transpires. There's no Joey Chestnuts here. It's gonna be an even playing field.
It's gonna be interesting. So catch that. That'll be on our July 4th special here on Current Sports. But man, oh man, we have a lot of fun here on the show. Hopefully you had a lot of fun with us today. You can join us same time, same place tomorrow. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. Shout out to Eric Rutland, who joined me, head coach of Lance United. You listen to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKRE's Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic start to your week. And be easy, people.